Wednesday, May 16th, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Well, there's a lot to go over today. I had planned on doing a show yesterday, but interestingly enough, due to something that I often talk about called planned obsolescence, my computer and my phone basically ceased to function yesterday. I had avoided doing any kind of updates for about a month or so intentionally. And then my phone and my computer got to the point of almost non-functionality yesterday, where they wouldn't load, nothing would come up, and everything else seemed to work just fine. Interestingly enough, I decided to do the updates, and then right after the updates were finished, everything stopped working. I couldn't access the internet, and now that I finally got them back up late last night, everything seems to work just fine. I just found that very interesting. Of course, it could be some big coincidence, as always, but I found that to be very interesting. So to catch up from the last 2 days, there's a few things I want to go over, just a few quick points before I get into the larger stories, one of which is breaking news from today. First, the U.S. has now imposed new sanctions on Iran and actually designated Iran's central bank, the head of the central bank, as a terrorist, accusing him of funneling millions of dollars to Hezbollah. So I find that very interesting. I guess ISIS and other extremist groups in Syria and elsewhere in the world are okay, as long as you're the U.S. government. Seems wildly hypocritical, but nothing new there. It also seems interesting that the U.S. is kind of doubling down on their efforts to stand against Iran, despite the fact that the rest of the world, almost the rest of the world entirely, is standing against this decision to back out of the Iran nuclear deal. So very interesting to see how that's playing out. They're really kind of putting their thumb on everybody else, and we're seeing the response, especially from the EU, which we'll get into down the line here. Now, it's important, I want to say before we get any further, that we do not allow these things, these hot-button topics, Israel, one of them, which I'll also talk about in a second, to continue to divide us. It's very clear that these things, as much as they're important to talk about, are being used to further divide people. And there are a lot of people coming out intentionally to make these things divisive more so than they need to be, spreading misinformation, doing everything they can. So it's important that even when we disagree, we need to make sure that we don't allow it to divide us amongst ourselves. It's important. We can disagree. That's something that rarely happens today. We've been conditioned to think that we simply can't disagree. And if someone has an alternative viewpoint, that they're the enemy. But that's not the case. Let them be like that. Let those people coming out and giving those harsh comments and divisive nature online specifically, let them do so. Don't let it bother you. Continue to stand back and be open to all perspectives and the facts on the table. Very important. Now, the first one I want to talk about that's breaking news from today is apparently the OPCW released a statement in regard to its findings in Sarakeb, if I'm saying that correctly, stating that chlorine was likely used in the area. Now, interestingly enough, despite the inconclusive nature of that statement, likely not being certain, you can imagine how a lot of these mainstream publications are running with this information. The team's assessment is based on finding two cylinders that likely held chlorine. And now that's something that's important to understand, because after all the time that passed, intentionally keeping these investigations from happening, which we already know was not due to Syria and Russia, rather due to the UN security team keeping them from accessing the site. So it's very easy to make sure that those things are there. And that being said, we can't jump to any conclusions, right? The fact that these chlorine bombs were there, it could possibly mean that they were in fact used. But taking that into consideration, we have to also make the very clear point that you won't hear on any of the mainstream channels that just because chlorine was used does not de facto mean that Assad was behind it. That's just jumping to a conclusion, and that's not the case. There's no evidence to support the fact that Assad was behind this. I continue to stand behind the idea that I don't think chlorine was used at all. But that's my opinion based on the facts on the table. But now that they've found these two canisters, cylinders, which we've already shown were there in pictures that were almost clearly placed there. It was the pictures surrounding the cylinders were very obviously staged. Caitlin Johnstone did an excellent article really highlighting the fact that it was obviously staged. Whether they were there due to being dropped or not, they used them and staged them in a way that made them look, you know, to suit the narrative. That's important to understand. So knowing this and seeing that they're there, we need to make sure that we don't jump to these conclusions and let this lead us down. They're also using the point and saying that people there, witnesses, are claiming that they had signs of chlorine poisoning. But every single doctor that we've spoken to or that we've seen, that all the information out there today has made it very clear, abundantly clear, even at The Hague when they did the briefing for the OPCW, that all they saw was smoke inhalation. Absolutely no signs of any chemical weapons use. So that's important. We have to make sure we take in all the information when we hear these new facts. But that doesn't mean we should discard the fact that maybe chlorine was in fact used. Again, I don't think that's the case. But as this continues to develop, and as the OPCW comes out with more findings, we need to be open to any possibility. But as we see it move forward, it's very clear that the mainstream media is trying to use this to frame it to basically to justify the claims they've made in the past, which we already can plainly see aren't true. It's very important that as we move forward with all of these stories, that we stick to the facts. And it's important that we don't allow them to lead us along with their conjecture and their false conclusions. People today are coming out of the woodwork to try to make you doubt what you're seeing, to make you confused about what's true or not. And that's important to understand as well. Spreading misinformation online as well as on the media to make you constantly doubt what you're seeing. As I've always said, I never shy away from giving you my opinion. That's what I'm here for. You're here for my analysis of what we're looking at. But I'm always clear when I'm giving you my opinion. And as I always say, do your own research. Don't just listen to what others have to say. Take a wide variety of information from a wide variety of sources and do your due diligence. Come to your own conclusions. That's very important because plenty of people are trying to come out and make it seem like what I'm doing or what other independent media are doing are trying to sway your opinion. That's not the case, very clearly. I'm constantly telling you to come to your own conclusions because that's what's most important. Watch their channels, watch my channel, watch everybody's information and put it all together, stand back without emotion and judge the facts on the table. And if you do that, I like to believe that it's pretty clear that where I'm leaning seems to be the most logical way to go, but you come to your own conclusions, as always. And in particular, that comes down to what's happening in Israel today in Gaza. U.S. praises Israel, blocks U.N. call for investigation into the now killing of 61 civilians. It's very important to see this is how this continues to develop. It's a very controversial topic today, more so than most I've seen recently. And clearly, you know, one side's calling any criticism of Israel in any possible way as anti-Semitic, which is interesting because anti-Semitism is essentially about the Jewish religion, not the state of Israel, not Zionism, which is what this is really about. But all those things kind of get mushed together and they make it seem like anything against even calling out Israel for their very blatant human rights violations is all of a sudden anti-Semitic. But that's part of the plan here to make sure that we cannot criticize what's clearly going on today. And this is a very interesting point here because the U.S. is essentially, despite their facts of kind of praising their Israel's restraint, is now blocking a U.N. investigation into what happened. Very revealing there. And this is in no way, shape, or form the first time this has happened. The U.S. has a very clear record of, I think it's now 44 times, in fact, of vetoing any kind of resolutions that demonize or look into Israel's actions. That's very, very revealing. We even saw recently they blocked a UN investigation into Israel's live fire in Gaza. So it's very clear that they're stopping any kind of further investigation into what's going on here. So if they were really praising them for their restraint in killing 61 people, this wouldn't be the case. Now, it's also important to understand what's going on here because people are trying to constantly just a barrage of false information, kind of making this seem very one-sided. And as I've constantly pointed out, there are not completely innocent on either side. I have no doubt that Hamas, to some degree, is involved in what's going on and making things happen on this side while Israel is taking over extreme actions on the other side. There are people, you know, whether you're talking about throwing stones or Molotov cocktails or whatever all the claims are from the Palestinian side, it still does not justify what we're seeing on the opposite side. We're seeing people openly shot down. Women, children, it does not justify what's happening. And then people will come out in defense saying, oh, they're throwing stones, like that makes it okay behind an electrified fence opening fire on protesters because they're throwing stones. It just doesn't make any sense. And the point is, they're always trying to put it all under the justification that everything's being controlled by Hamas on the other side. And that is not the case. Again, it doesn't mean that they're completely innocent. I'm sure there are things on the other side being done to cause this kind of problem. But that doesn't mean that every single person in Gaza is some kind of a terrorist, because everything's being lumped into one side or the other. We need to be able to stand back and see the logical conclusion from everything we're looking at, and not just reflexively ignore anything that does not perfectly fit in with what we're told is the truth, which is what's happening everywhere today. Now, it's important that we continue to focus on the facts on the table, as I continue to say it. And as if to accentuate that point, an article from today from globalresearch.ca, Israeli forces shoot Canadian doctor in Gaza. Israeli forces shot a Canadian doctor in the leg on Monday as he treated wounded Palestinians protesting in Gaza. Dr. Tarek Loubani, who works as an emergency physician in London, Ontario, and teaches Western Ontario's medical school, said he was wearing a distinctive green surgeon scrubs and was standing with several paramedics decked in bright orange vests that signify their status as medical workers. Quote, "I am very seasoned about not being shot at. I know where to stand. I know where to be. I know how not to get shot. Snipers don't reach me because of mistakes. I did everything right. We were all huddled. It was quiet at the exact moment I got shot. The bullet went through my left leg, through my right leg, and out and hit the ground." Loubani's medical assistant was also shot and killed by Israeli forces. They were unable to help him for a long period of time until they finally drug him to an isolated area and got him out, and he died on the way there. Now, this is a very, very important point to make. Now, you could always chalk this up as some kind of an accident, but like he said, it was quiet where he was. There was no shooting. He was very clearly marked as a medical personnel, and yet he got shot. And the point where he's trying to make is that this wasn't intentional, that they're trying to take down medical personnel. We also saw articles talking about how journalists, even from the last few days, are being targeted by Israeli forces while they're trying to cover what's going on in Gaza. These things cannot continue to be chalked up as some kind of mistake. I mean, how can we justify how is Hamas controlling this doctor being shot by Israeli forces? It just does not line up. Again, it doesn't mean that Hamas does not have a presence on that side. It just shows you that what's happening from Israel's side is clearly an excessive use of force, regardless of what's going on. And I condemn any kind of extreme violence anywhere. Humanity needs to be thought about here, not just political sides and countries. People are being murdered based on some kind of a political argument, and that has to enrage us as every side's coming out trying to defend what's happening. And it's just pretty much disgusting to see. As we've shown past articles of snipers shooting down unarmed civilians, and there's 20 different examples from the last year that show exactly what I'm talking about. We have to begin to see the reality here and not allow ourselves to be manipulated emotionally by political agendas, which is what's all around this, talking about Jerusalem, the embassy move, everything that's going on, and the U.S.'s absolutely disgusting stance of ignoring everything that's going on there for obvious, obvious political reasons. Moving on to the next story, coming from Yonhap News, DPRK says to cancel high-level talks with South Korea over South Korea-U.S. military drills. Well, no surprise there, as this is something that we've been talking about since the very beginning of these peace talks, and how we've been calling exactly how this was going to go down, how the U.S. was not going to back up in any way, was going to continue to carry out all of its military drills, and do everything it can to get North Korea to respond just like this. North Korea's state media outlet is claiming that the military drills were a rehearsal for potential invasion of the country. So clearly, this is what we're seeing. And now the next story as well, North Korea threatens to scrap Trump's summit over U.S.-South Korea military drills. So what we're seeing here is this very obvious effort, like we've been saying from the beginning, to ensure that they give North Korea every possible reason and justification to pull out of what they're doing here. We need first understand that South Korea is a military-occupied state of the United States. The United States has a massive military presence there. So they're clearly going to go along with whatever the U.S. is saying, despite them clearly trying to go against them and make peace with North Korea. All of the peace we've seen is due to South Korea's actions. And clearly they're you know, have to basically say that the U.S. is involved, but it's been very clear that the U.S. has done everything it can to ensure that this doesn't come to pass. So the point is, if they really wanted to see peace here, they would not have continued to carry out these military drills, as North Korea said, as a rehearsal for a potential invasion. If you were truly trying to come to peace, why would you continue military drills that historically have been about decapitating their president and bombing them with nuclear weapons? It's ridiculous to think that that's just a casual drill taking place. It's clearly meant to cause exactly the kind of reaction we're seeing right now. And now it continues forward to today, where we're seeing North Korea threaten to abandon the peace summit again over denuclearization demands. North Korea has threatened to pull out of next month's peace summit with Washington if the U.S. insists on the peninsula hurriedly giving up its nuclear weapons without offering immediate sanctions relief. After blaming joint South Korean-U.S. military exercises for the country's decision yesterday to cancel a planned summit with the South and to suspend talks, the North revealed another source of anger: National Security Advisor John Bolton's comments from his appearance Sunday on CNN's State of the Union, where he suggested that North Korea must commit to denuclearization to help it become a normal nation, which... A normal nation. I mean, John Bolton is clearly, I mean, he's been very open about the fact that he does not want peace with North Korea. I mean, that's plain on the table to see. So his statements are clearly designed to ignite this kind of a response. But to become a normal nation, it just doesn't make sense when we see someone like Israel, who ignores all of the other, the non-proliferation treaty, all the everything else that everybody else has to adhere to, Israel just completely ignores. And then we have countries like Pakistan and India and United States and Saudi Arabia actively seeking nuclear weapons, and the rest of them already having them. It's very ridiculous to say that they have to become a normal state. Does normal mean subservient to the United States? I mean, clearly that's kind of what he's implying there. Kim expressed anger towards Bolton and other U.S. officials, adding that the North rejects the Libya model, where a state surrenders its weapons first, then receives incentives like sanctions relief. Kim is quoted as saying, "If the U.S. is trying to drive us into a corner to force our unilateral nuclear abandonment, we will no longer be interested in such dialogue and cannot but reconsider our proceeding to the DPRK-U.S. summit." He added that the North has already declared its willingness to denuclearize the peninsula, but that it must not be counted on to act first. Quote, if the Trump administration corners us and tries to force us to give up our nuclear weapons unfairly, we will not be interested in such talks anymore and cannot help but reconsider having the upcoming summit. And this is just something that we've continued to point out. And I'm glad that they're speaking out, because in the past, they have tend to kind of keep themselves in this regard, but clearly they're trying to make an effort, like we saw with South Korea, to show the world that they're not the ones that should be demonized in this back and forth, which again does not mean that North Korea is completely innocent of all, you know. I always make this point that every one of these governments is guilty in their own right. But what we're seeing here on the table is very clearly the U.S. refusing to give up even an inch while North Korea is openly trying to make progress here, willing to denuclearize as long as the U.S. pulls back on sanctions. And it's not even that they have to do it first. It's just simply that they want to see some kind of a give. And the United States has already openly said that even if they do denuclearize, they're likely still going to maintain the economic sanctions, which doesn't make any sense. What this really has to show you is what I've been saying all along, that due to people like Bolton, as well as just classic U.S. foreign policy, they have no interest of having any kind of a peace with North Korea because it threatens their position on South Korea, which stands to combat China in the future. And that's exactly what they're trying to maintain. All of this has to do with U.S. hegemony in the world and in growing to combat the rising power of Russia and China. And if they allow this peace to happen, it chips away one more thing from what they're trying to maintain here. And we even just saw North Korea speak out in the last couple of days about trying to discuss with the world about ending nuclear missile weapons testings in general. So it just seems, I mean, you could always chalk all this up to some kind of grand deception by North Korea. But what we are seeing is the exact opposite of what the United States is trying to present as the peacemaker. And they are refusing to do anything to make peace with North Korea, and in addition, doing everything in their power to incite this kind of a reaction. Just ask yourself, would you still carry out these kind of drills that threaten to invade the country if you were actually honest and genuinely trying to find peace? Most likely not. Moving on to the next story, coming from the dailysheeple.com, Twitter deploys draconian shadow ban and behavioral filters. This is a very important one that discusses the ongoing censorship and suppression going on with these larger social media outlets, which is really no surprise to most people. We literally just saw a story about Facebook releasing its information and how millions of things were suppressed due to the idea of hate speech, which were largely due to other people flagging them, which is really a very subjective thing today. And that's what we're seeing a lot of this revolving around. Apparently now Twitter is going to start hiding tweets that, quote, detract from the conversation. And if they believe you're trying to, quote, game the system or simply acting like a jerk, it will push your tweets down lower. And this is something we have to understand is highly subjective. Clearly, what's the conversation? Who's dictating what is the actual information they want to be showing? I mean, we have to understand more than ever, this is simply them openly saying that they're going to tailor the information you're seeing on their outlets to suit a specific agenda. Now, clearly this is being framed from a lot of sides about censoring conservative narratives, but it's very clear that it happens on both sides. We have to get past this ridiculous two-party deception. This has nothing to do with liberals and conservatives. It has to do with countering the establishment narrative. And as long as we continue to frame this in liberals and conservatives, we're feeding right into their divide and conquer tactic. That's what they want us to be doing. That's what things like this are meant to instill in us. They're fighting us down as conservatives and the liberals are crazy. Or vice versa. It's so much bigger than that. And the real agenda is always about war. It has nothing to do with these tit-for-tat politics on the bottom level. Even if the people within are not aware that they're partaking in this, they are feeding into a larger agenda. So what this, in my mind, is doing is basically censoring anybody that talks out about the real agenda behind the scenes. And whether that is tailored to make it look like conservatives are being censored or not, the two-party deception is part of the problem we need to look past. But we need to begin to, it's a hard thing to say that we need to stop using these social media outlets, because clearly you can see that we're on there, a lot of people are on there. But what I would argue is that if you're just an average individual just looking for information, I say you delete your accounts and move on, because all you're going to do is get kind of a barrage of fake information meant to confuse you. Whereas people like us who are actively trying to speak out about the truth, whether you think that's real or not, it's important that we put our information out there where we're going to reach the most people. But the moment that Twitter and Facebook and YouTube are no longer the most widely used, I'll be the first one to delete my account. But the point is, we kind of have to go along with this today to reach the broadest audience. But for the average individual, I highly recommend you get off those as quick as possible and go to places like Steemit and DTube and BitChute and any number of other rising media outlets that are not highly being suppressed and censored. That's just my opinion. You do whatever you think is best. But I think it is very clear that they are doing everything in their power to censor very specific information. Moving on to the final story of the day, coming from collectiveevolution.com. Evidence suggests America's foster care system is a front for child sex trafficking. And this is one that's often very hard for people to listen to, very hard for people to digest. And it's one of the biggest stories that people really want to reflexively dismiss, because it's not fun to listen to. It is a hard topic to discuss. But the reality is, and this is something we've gotten into a lot in the past, is that there is a major connection between these foster care systems and places like Child Protective Services and how this facilitates this larger problem, whether they're aware of it or not. And I would argue that a lot of them are very much aware of what's really going on. We recently talked about articles showing that thousands of kids that are immigrants caught up in this system are just kind of disappearing in the system, or we've seen hundreds of kids absolutely go missing in months period of time that are put into the foster care system. And it's just very frustrating that we continue to hear this claim that, you know, that knowing this is going on, knowing that we have this connection between the foster care system and this sex trafficking epidemic today, we still continue to claim that taking them from a family and putting them into this system is to their benefit. And I find that very frustrating to see that it's continually forced that that's the case. Michael Dulce of the law firm Cohen Milstein discussed the statistical relationship between the foster care system and sexual abuse of minors. He said, quote, "Most people don't know about our nation's foster care and sex trafficking pipeline, but the facts are sobering. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children found that of more than 18,500 endangered runaways reported to NCMEC in 2016, one in six were likely victims of child sex trafficking. Of those, 86% were in the care of social services when they went missing. The outcomes of law enforcement efforts against sex trafficking repeatedly support the NCMEC estimate. In a 2013 FBI 70-city nationwide raid, 60% of the victims came from foster care or home or group homes. In 2014, New York authorities estimated that 85% of sex trafficking victims were previously in the child welfare system. 85%. Now, you could clearly make the case that that's simply that these kids are in these destitute positions. So it's more likely they'll find themselves in these circles. But it's hard to deny that kind of an association. He goes on to say, in 2012, Connecticut police rescued 88 children from sex trafficking. 86 were from the child welfare system. And even more alarming, the FBI discovered in a 2014 nationwide raid that many foster children rescued from sex traffickers, including children as young as 11, were never reported missing by child welfare authorities. Now that is the kicker, the fact that they were never even reported missing. Now you could always try to find ways to justify this or you know, this is why it's happening, it's not the foster care system's fault, but the fact that they failed to even report that they're missing has to give you some insight into what's really going on. Now, I always try to play devil's advocate and give you reasons what other people might say, but my honest opinion, there's a very clear connection to what's going on here, and the lack of reporting and the fact that the vast majority of these kids caught up in these sex trafficking rings are directly tied to the foster care system. As we always say, correlation is not causation, but to ignore the statistics we're looking at is simply irresponsible. It's something that we've talked about many, many times. John Whitehead did an article about how child trafficking of little girls in this country is simply an epidemic. And the numbers would absolutely blow your mind. And the fact that it is very rarely discussed by the mainstream media should show you all we need to see. The fact that this is such a huge problem and it's only growing, and the fact that it's not discussed by these mainstream outlets has to really give you an insight into some kind of a connection behind the scenes. There's absolutely no reason why this should not be one of the largest stories of the day ongoing. But the fact that they don't even talk about it, and especially when we see these larger cases like the NXIVM case, where it's actually one of the largest parts of the case, inside the documentation of the case, and yet they intentionally, briefly just skip right over the idea of pedophilia and child sex trafficking and simply just say human trafficking, and then breeze right past it into some of the people and don't ever really dive into what's really going on. It's very clear that there is an effort to make sure that that topic does not get wide discussion. And we have to ask ourselves why that is. What's behind the scenes? What's stopping them from telling us what's really going on? And as we've often talked about, there is a clear connection between elite circles and what's going on behind the scenes here with this child sex trafficking epidemic. Whether you're talking about politicians or in Hollywood, there is clearly something going on there that they do not want us to see. So it's very important that with all this information, we continue to be objective, we continue to apply critical thinking, and to come to your own conclusions, and don't allow yourself to be led by these emotional calls and this clear manipulation going on today. It's important that we always stand back and ask ourselves that question. Are we being emotionally manipulated? Are they using things like we saw in Gaza and the discussion of Hamas to manipulate the way we're seeing the facts? The facts on the table are often hard to ignore, which is precisely why there are many, many people out there today intentionally trying to use your emotions against you to lead you down the wrong path. So really, it comes down to a choice of whether you're going to allow it. Thank you all for tuning in today. If you value my work and want to help it continue, please support The Last American Vagabond in any way that you can, because it is entirely 100% your financial support that allows me to continue bringing you what you will likely not find anywhere else. For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or one of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.